That's what I'm going to do. Well, first of all, thank you, Lenny, for introducing me. And I'd like to thank the organizers for a very stimulating conference, and I've been having fun. So as Lenny said, the last couple of years, I've not been thinking very hard about cosmology, and but this has been fun, and it's stimulated me to think harder. Anyway, my talk was called Challenges in Cosmology. And the truth is, I don't know that they're challenges. I think they're probably my confusions. So since they're my confusion, I will share some of them with you, and I'd like you to help me out. Okay? And I will tell you stories that you probably know, but just to set up the first set of questions, let's start like that. Why is it so confusing, or one of the reasons why is it so confusing to put quantum mechanics and gravity together? When I was a kid, I thought it was ultraviolet divergences, blah, blah, blah. No, that's not one of the most confusing. The most confusing thing is about measurements. Is if you just turn off Planck's constant, I mean h bar, not the other one, then we're talking about geometry. And if you want to measure geometry, you're going to use very light rods and clocks so that you don't perturb the geometry much when you measure it. On the other hand, if you, so we did turn off h-bar and we turned on m-Planck. Now we're going to turn off m-Planck and we turn h-bar on. And if we want to make a measurement on a system and have good pointers, pointers that don't fluctuate much, we're going to make the apparatus, the measuring apparatus, full of states, very heavy. And so we have so-called good pointers. Yes? I'm not finished. Yeah, you have to be a little careful, yes. Okay, but, yes, okay. Ah, let me just be naive about this, okay, since I'm confused. Let me just say, let's turn off gravity, okay, by, I would say, G Newton, turn off G Newton, okay? So you turn off G Newton, and you're going to measure a quantum mechanical system, and I have a very large measuring device, and massive, and you do your measurements, okay? And they're reasonably precise. The bigger the object you make, the bigger the measuring device, the more precise they're going to be. Now, the problem is if you turn both on, h-bar and g-Newton, we're in a bind. Because if you do not want to perturb the geometry, and this is in principle. I don't mean that this is going to happen in this room, but this is in principle. So if I put both on h-bar and g-Newton, and I want to have a precise measurement of the geometry, my clocks and rods are going to fluctuate quantum mechanically. If I want to measure something quantum mechanical and make it very heavy, it'll gravitate. So there is no way really to quite separate the measuring device and the system without. So there's an interplay between the two. Now, we've learned how to do this in some space-times where we can define well-defined quantity. In particular, if you have asymptotic flat space-time, there is a quantity called the S matrix, which is well-defined mathematically. And the way it's set up is by taking these measuring devices and parametrically making them bigger at a rate that when they separate, the gravitational force diminishes, and they get bigger and bigger, and so at infinitum, you have a very precise measurement both at minus infinite time and at plus infinite in time. Now, I know people say, but that's not what's done at LHC. But let's talk just in principle, okay? So S matrices, and we've learned this in perturbative string theory, this is a very good quantity to compute. It's well defined. There are other quantities in different space-time, in particular ADS, where we can compute correlation functions on the boundary that are well defined. That's the ADS-CFT connection. And I've listened and I've heard a lot of talks about FRW-CFT, DS-CFT. And my question is the following. To introduce the question, let me make a couple more remarks. Let's talk about the sigma for a second. It doesn't have to be the sigma, but if I want a measuring device that's a local measuring device, but reasonably big, made out of local degrees of freedom, quantum field theory degrees of freedom. The entropy, the amount of information you can store in such a device, if it's made, say, of light degrees of freedom, the entropy will scale like r to the 3 halves. The entropy of the sitter scales like r squared. Now, obviously, to have, so first of all, there is a time scale. If you take an object like that, a measuring device, there's a time scale e to the r 3 halves where your pointers are going to become fuzzy and your measurement gets fuzzy. That is obviously not a problem in the flat space time case where we can, you know, scale everything up in a proper way and we have well-defined questions. I can derive this for you, but I don't think I want to. I think there's enough to discuss that I will take your time for that. Actually, if you look at the Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff equation, this is just a threshold of forming a black hole. If you pack master's degrees of freedom, and if you look at Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff equations, you find the scaling, and the mass of the objects grows like R, actually. So it's in units of M Planck. It's all in units of M Planck. So now the problem is the following. The three questions I want to ask. In the sitter space, I can obviously not bring these guys infinitely far apart, infinitely far away. So there will be an imprecision on my measurements, which means we probably all will agree, all these observers will agree up to a certain decimal place, if they have a way to set that up. But at some point, at some decimal place, there will be disagreement among us. There will be a fuzziness, right? This does not happen for the S matrix oh, yeah, it's very far. It's very, okay, but I don't care. This is a question of principle, okay? Yeah, exactly, because we have, okay. So the question, yeah. Or why r to the 3 halves? Because it's in the presence of gravity, really. But let me, look, I can write for you the Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff equation and show you how that scales. But I think a heuristic argument is the following. The entropy for very light degrees of freedom scales like the energy density to the 3 quarters, okay? So let's take these modes just at threshold of forming a black hole. Right? And I want to calculate the entropy. So the entropy will be in 3 dimensions, you can do 4 dimensions. Integral d3 r sigma of r, replace this now by rho of r to the 3 quarters. And then at threshold of forming a black hole, what is the energy density? Well, it's the momentum, the energy, the momentum, but at threshold, the momentum is the size. So it's going to be r over r cubed in Planck units. So this case, like 1 over r squared, plug this back in here. I hope I didn't make a mistake. What is this? 1 over r to the 3 halves. And that's where your r to the 3 halves comes from. Okay. The mass, and the same argument, you can calculate the mass, which is integral d3 r rho of r, and you'll find that this is integral d3 r over r squared, and it scales like r. Okay. That's kind of a heuristic argument. So a little footnote. If you were a local observer and build a machine like this, which, you know, localized machine with this amount of states, you will never be able to observe a recurrence. No way. Your machine is way fuzzy before a recurrence time. Okay, so recurrence doesn't mean anything. Also, the tunneling of the formation of bubbles within your horizon, typical time is also a recurrence time. You will never see that because your measuring device will be fuzzy. But that's not really what my confusion is. Oh, I know. Yes. But the crunching bubbles do, for sure. Crunching bubbles do a nuclear fast. So those you'll see. But typically, you will not see the one that go to DS, the DS bubbles. But that's not the issue, really. I mean, it's just a footnote, because I'm paid to come here and I want to say something rather than get everything from you. Okay. But can I finish just? Yeah, let me finish. Right. So in any case, in asymptotic flat space-time, we have a very good set of S-matrix elements are good objects. In ADS, we have the connection with CFT. So I heard a lot of discussion about the SCFT and FRWCFT. My first question is, where will be the uncertainty in these, in the setup that is being thought of? And I understand this is in the in a decimal place. I probably don't have enough. Okay. But in principle, there is an uncertainty. It's not as good as the S matrix. There is, in principle, an uncertainty. FRWCFT, I heard discussions about that, but no difference was made between accelerating FRWs and decelerating FRWs. And I expect that the observables, maybe the DSCFT or the FRWCFT, should be qualitatively different between between the accelerating one and the decelerating one, simply because the structure at infinity is different. No, I mean right now, accelerating and decelerating. No, this even without the cosmological. Forget the. That's what it. Okay, then those I'm less confused because infinity is lifelike, and I can imagine that you have good observables. This is not available here, in my mind. And so the question to the people that are thinking about this is, how do you think? So the setup. I mean, I don't think copying just what's being done in ADS and translating this in ADS-CFT and translating this in DS-CFT is going to work. Okay, something else has to be put in, and what is it? So that's my confusion when I get out of the ambulance. Okay. Because of this uncertainty. I mean, you tell me where in your computation of the correlation function do you find uncertainties of this kind? Where do you find this? Where? Where in the computation? It's a simple.
Very holographic and extremely difficult to use.
Okay.
Approximate concepts, which are not exact,
good.
Very easy to use.
Yeah, you said that.
And I'm hammering that point.
Yes, I want to really focus on that because, you know, some of the discussions seem to be, you know, can rotate this contour. But I don't want to be, you know, this is not meant to be obnoxious or anything like that. I am confused. There is a conceptual difference between this situation and this situation. Okay, so what is the what's the program in DSCFT? That's what I'd like to understand. Or if or maybe this is not going anywhere, and then I'll change the question. I wasn't involved in this, and I mean genuinely. I just want to know how are we going to think about observables in this context. Okay.
I would say this is a good tool for studying, you know, flight changes, and we'll get to see all these things.
Oh, as you decelerate, well, you mean, but then that gets back to this situation. That eventually. Okay.
He would.
Okay. Then let me, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
That might be infrared. Yeah.
idea is, though, that it might be possible in a certain way to make a limiting quantity, you know, exponentially unlikely, but to remove that exponentially small number by a renormalization. Could there be a good limiting quantity?
Okay, good. That's the thought. Okay.
It wouldn't answer your question. Your question is, how do you relate this to observable or non-observable?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
It wouldn't answer
that question. No. Moreover, there's another question I have. I mean, if really the ancestor universe, you know, has a cosmological constant, you know, I'm there with my apparatus. I cannot draw the pictures, and I don't even know how to draw them myself, but the pictures with the hearts and all that stuff. Who draws this? Lenny. No, but I mean, really, what does it mean operationally? You know, if the local observer has only that time to measure. This is in the sitter. No, this is anywhere, but you know, but in the sitter you have a limitation. You can't take R as big as you want. If he does enter, but it's not clear that this is going to happen in the ancestor universes. I mean, I thought the pictures was that you had a cosmological constant in the ancestor universe. You do, yeah, but how long is it? The decay in the DS is e to the r squared. And therefore, your e to the r 3 halves is way, way, way shorter than e to the r squared. You never see this decay to the other DS. You'll see the crunches. You'll see the crunches. I understand that. Okay, so then let me trans. But okay, let's. Can it? Can okay? So then I go back to the question, the previous question. How does he figure out the uncertainty on for the guys in bubble number one? Because is he going to have precise answer? And if his answers are precise, does he extract the uncertainty for person in bubble one, the S1, people in the S2? I don't think it's so clear. So what setup do you? Okay, these are words, obviously. I have words. Is there a mathematical setup like this? Most of them probably never. I don't know.
I very much doubt
that. Me too.
Yeah.
Okay, but so. Okay. I
don't have an answer. But
okay.
We'll just talk about the methodology that we use.
Okay.
We use this all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
We take some theory like string theory, flat pattern, or whatever, which may have some exact things. We calculate them, or hope to calculate them, estimate yourself, or something like
good.
That.
Good.
Those are not the things we want to know. If we want to know what's going on in a finite laboratory.
Yeah.
Low energy laboratory, those are not the things you want to know.
No, that's true.
And we don't calculate the things we want to know. Instead, we calculate, let's say, some estimated zones of boundary tolerators. And from them, we do this thing that we don't understand, which we deduce a low energy Lagrangian.
Right. Yes.
We deduce a low energy Lagrangian.
Good, good.
And then we take that low energy Lagrangian and use it in a context in which we haven't demonstrated that it applies.
Good.
It works in a lot of cases.
It does.
That's the methodology that we use.
Good.
So we look for some place where we can calculate exactly, then try to interpret
them in terms
of a low energy effective theory.
Yes.
Then use the low energy.
Okay. But
is that a fair and good thing to do?
It's a fair and good thing to do. But in this particular case, we don't have the exact.
The FRWCFE is an attempt to do that.
Okay, and that's a decelerating, as you said. Yeah, okay, good. But then. Well, correct, I don't know, but at least does it show up in a computer? How would you imagine it showing up?
Like?
I don't have an idea. Yeah. Yeah, right. Yes. 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 Correct. Correct. Yes. Because I cannot use black holes. I don't know how to use black holes to make measurements.
I mean, yes.
You mean in principle? No, I don't know of any. Yeah, no, but the fact that that's fine. But you see, the setups we have are not in that context.
Yeah.
I mean, in conceptually, how do you actually really set that up properly? But okay. Okay, so exactly. All right. Okay.
That was such a good question. I'm very anxious to hear what the other ones are.
Really? Okay. Well, the other ones are kind of more mundane, and that's maybe I should. Yeah. I think I know the answer to that question, but. In the old days when we did inflation, and maybe some of you don't remember if they're young enough, the old picture of inflation was some slow roller. That's still the picture today. There's a small cosmological constant here. We put the inflaton in this region, and there was a problem. And I don't know whether that still is the case, but I think numerical analysis that I've heard of said that the setup has to be such that the scalar field is homogeneous on scales larger than the would-be horizon of inflation. Okay? So, at the onset. And I remember that I thought that was rather peculiar because that seemed to not solve the horizon problem. I mean, it mitigates it at best. It mitigates it. And then I thought, well, maybe that's not so bad because actually I know examples in ferromagnets where this happens. You take a ferromagnet, heat it up at a temperature above the Curie temperature, cool it so fast that the speed of sound cannot traverse your whole sample. Okay, so you form Bloch domains. Okay, now who is to say that it is impossible that your sample is suddenly. You know, normally when you cool a magnet very fast, you'll get these Bloch domains. In cosmology, they call them Kibble bubbles or whatever, horizons. And things point in different directions in general. Who is to say that when I cool, there's suddenly a sample of that size where everything is like this? Okay, it's not like it's crazy because it's a causal, it's simply low entropy. It's more rare, but okay, so it's a rare event, and it can happen. I mean, you don't violate causality. Well, you violate causality pro forma, but it can happen. Yes. So my question is, when we do these Coleman-DeLucia transition, are we avoiding this problem? Does a Coleman-DeLucia transition automatically lead to inflation in the baby bubble? But is it all?
But in the sense, so it's going to be homogeneous over the horizon scale, and that you arrange the potential and so on. I think in the sense, you kind of push this problem back, you still need to explain basically
the starting point. Okay.
And well, in a way, it's not over, but you need to say, all right, I have finite entropy initial conditions, and internal inflation can start.
Then it goes.
Then
it goes. Okay, so there's no change in this.
You have to say you have those finite entropy.
Small. Yeah, finite but small.
No, it doesn't have to be small. What you need is finite entropy initial conditions with a finite probability for internal inflation to happen.
Okay, and then when it starts.
For inflation to happen, you need some probability to be in that situation.
Right, okay.
Very, very complicated. So I'm thinking about, roughly speaking, an analogy. getting to sea level without getting trapped in a local wind or something. There's a large number of pockets in the landscape make it more likely that you start in a very quiet, rigid state that you would be likely to get trapped in a local wind. That's not the question I'm asking.
Okay. We often feel entitled to start with an energy. And I think that's just what we learned about the Big Bang.
Right.
Yeah. But in fact, it's not clear that that's what we get to do in a big theory.
This is a observed fact of the energy we apply a long time.
So if I have a bowling ball, one thing I'm sure was it didn't start with talking about energy. But in cosmology,
just to come back, the issue of going down that Everest without getting trapped was absolutely conventional energy conservation as well. And again, it's very high and top of that Everest, and then you just down all the way.
No. There's a huge amount of friction.
Cosmological. Yeah. Another question? Another two?
Two for Willie, zero for Willie.
Number three, wait. That one I'm going to lose.
I want to go back for a second and make it a bit harder.
So yeah, sure. Good. Good.
So, you know, when Maltina first talked about this, he's considering these super horizon correlations.
Mm-hmm. Because you decelerated at some point?
Yeah.
Sure.
I agree. I agree with you about something that most likely consider as a key in general doesn't make much sense. But there is another case which is sort of qualitative similar to that, which is in the center space of people's point dimension.
Uh-huh.
Where again these super horizon correlations are observable in the census paper and so if you have a chance to make sense anywhere.
It has to be in that context, you would say.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, I think you have to enlarge and do the picture. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I sympathize.
Also, on your first question, I'd like to pick up on someone else. If we just take an actual apparatus from that function, we think in turn off gravity, we think we have a really good, couple of theories. And we can busy ourselves with what we can work out how perfect it is based on that really good theory. So its imperfection is a possible thing. And so one might hope that the same thing happens here. Someone who could see a piece of work goes, oh, those poor guys are the worst ones. They're really on the side. And we're out of here. We can make it else.
Okay, yeah.
But you're I think, asking where.
Yeah, how do you think this is going to manage? Yeah. The other thing is, often I've heard talk about the Bunch-Davis vacuum. Right? Now, it's clear that we're not starting in the Bunch-Davis vacuum when we do a little story like that. Nobody prepares the Bunch-Davis vacuum here. There's no such thing. That doesn't happen. Right? So let's say we start with some state that satisfies all the requirements that it, for short distances, it's, you know, it does what it's supposed to do. And we take that initial state, let it evolve according to Schrödinger's equation. We know what the Hamiltonian is. So you take the inflaton, that potential, and follow this wave function. Okay? And then the story goes, as you inflate, modes go outside the horizon. And then we decelerate, they come back inside the horizon, or at least, better said, our horizon catches up with them. That's another way of saying that. It is clear that if you decelerate long enough, you will be sensitive to these initial to the initial wave function. So what is this wheel of the Bunch-Davis state? Why are we using the Bunch-Davis state? Is it because it's a state that if you have a large number of e-folding, that somehow you tend to, but eventually I will be sensitive to the non-Bunch Davis part, right? I mean, is that? No, okay, so, but that requires a large number of e-folding and a long time of deceleration. And actually, if you have a short time, I'm sorry, if, let me say it better. If you have a small number of e-foldings, you'll be very sensitive to it in short amount of time. Ah, so no, that leads me to another question. That's 2-1, I think. I've lost you. Okay. Yeah, yeah, no, no. I understand that. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Good. So then a last thing, and that one I'm confused about. One. Do we have time for a last question? Okay. We have a small cosmological constant today. Let me pretend that this is it. This is the final cosmological constant. Turn off CDL, Coleman Delucia, for a second. Okay? And we have a pseudo-cosmological constant here. Okay? I have a certain amount of entropy here. I'm going to do a bunch of e-foldings. The volume of space is going to get bigger and bigger. It seems like I'm going to gain a lot of... the entropy is going to increase because the volume gets so big. Is it possible that because of this cosmological constant, I cannot go over the entropy that I have in this universe, that that bounds the number of e-foldings? In other words, you know, the entropy is going to go, oh, let me, yeah. What I'm saying, well, as you know, if you put too much information in the sitter, it'll crunch or go to singularity. Yes, that's the same statement. In other words, but is that constraint? Can that constrain the number of e-foldings?
Well,
yeah, good.
Too many e-foldings,
mm-hmm.
Instead of getting a homogeneous
yeah, that gives you like 80 or 70. Numerically, I mean, I can tell you roughly what it is. I mean, you get, if you take a cosmological constant of the order, the potential of order 10 to the 16 GeV, and you put 10 to the minus, I don't know, 3 electron volt to the 40, then the N you get is of the order of 70 or something like that. It's very close to what people require. All right. Well,
uh-huh.
Well, I mean, you do produce a certain amount of entropy. It has to fit. Look, it has to fit within this horizon. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. So then, yeah. Okay. So, how do you think?
Well, it has to be a role.
No, I need to think about that. Oh, yeah, yeah. I talk about the entropy stored in photons. So here's a if take this to be the energy density to begin with, this energy density, okay, and say that you transfer most of it, I mean, efficiently down. Okay, A cubed, take it to be e to the scaling, like e to the number of e-foldings, e times, right? take this and claim that this cannot be, has to be smaller than the entropy stored in here. Yes. Yeah, but see, you see, that's okay, so.
What you care about, I think, is that
Then, yeah. Right.
But it's going to cut away most of the. I'm not sure.
Okay, so you, so you say there is no bound on the number of. Okay, okay. All right. Okay. 3-1.
I always said I don't think so.
Okay. I wasn't thinking about back reaction per se. I mean, obviously, there would be back reaction once you get close to the entropy bound, because that's when you're going to get the pst. Yeah. Right. Maybe. That was a question.
Yeah, but I think the only bound really is that the asymptotic observer is back to a light cone.
Mm-hmm.
That would seem more.
Well, then, yeah. So in the initial slice, yeah, you don't put more information there yet. Yeah, I agree. 3-1. That's it. Do I have any other questions right now? Yes. Oh.
There's a question here.
Okay. I thought I was going to avoid this. No. Yes.
Just a general question.
Yeah. Right question.
And so, you know, we have the experience that if we define
the problem,
the inclusive quantities that have a physical meaning that don't make sense to them specifically for things like plus and minus violation or light production. A beautiful dynamics, right? You can separate the short distance physics from the long distance physics. We talked about that. You can tell from currents. And so there's a very hard question about the long distance. We put them aside for later. We learn a lot about the short distance. The question is, we just want to talk about what observers see in cosmology.
Okay.
Is there a strategy like that? I think you're using it already.
Well, that's good. Well, that, doesn't that go back to the questions of the beginning, I think? I mean, I don't have much. What?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.